Yes, because it is the joke. That is a hilarious.
And she was like, is that supposed to be funny? And I'm like,
well, sweetie, well, I know you didn't mean it to be, but.
But it's pretty obvious that everybody else thinks it's a joke, which means they think CNN is a joke.
And honestly, a lot of those people I would assume that are in Fallon's audience are not necessarily like MAGA right wingers. They're on her side of the aisle and they still are like, okay, Galen.
Okay, sure.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends, and welcome back with another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie, and I am here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We are here every Tuesday and Thursday, and today we have so much news. And it's like little news, and it's a lot of stories, but it's not in-depth stories, but it's stories that you need to know. So we're going to open the episode with a type of lightning round, rapid fire. I mean, I don't know if lightning round is actually correct because I'm sure, like, I got clips and we're going to talk about things, but lightning-ish,
lightning, whatever. Lightning-esque, yes.
Lightning light. So what are we going to talk about? We're going to be talking about, of course, there are new developments with the Fort Stewart shooting that happened yesterday afternoon. The media or CNN thought, I guess maybe they had a breaking news story about a meeting that was going to happen at the VP's residence, which kind of fell flat. We got a lot of things to get into. And so I'm going to go ahead and jump in. So first of all, as I mentioned, yesterday, it was like early in the morning, about 10:30 in the morning, I think is when the news first broke.
Yeah. I was at Trader Joe's as usual. I'm always either in a movie theater and I don't even go to the movies that much. But every time I sit
You go way
down,
more than I do. I went a lot this summer
because the kids wanted to see the new, what was it, Lilo and Stitch, and then How to Train Your Dragon, and then what was the other one? Oh, Karate Kid Legends. So we went a couple weeks in a row, and every time I'd sit down, all of a sudden my phone's like, ding, 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 ding. And I'd pull it out, and Mercedes like 14 messages deep, and one of my kids would lean over and be like, you're being rude. You're not supposed to be doing this.
You're like, look, and I so got then I'm breaking
yeah,
news.
I'm in Trader Joe's yesterday and I start getting the alerts. I stop in the middle of the aisle. My daughters are like, you need to keep moving. Mom, you need to keep moving.
I'm like, I'm glad they keep you in line. They're like, Mom, we have to do the shopping.
Yes.
That has to wait. Thankfully, the story ended. I mean, for what was being reported, we ended up with good news.
Yeah,
as much as we can get good news in a situation like this.
Yeah. It could have been a lot worse. It could have been horrible, horrible.
For sure. There was a shooting at Fort Stewart, which is in Georgia. It's also one of the largest U.S. Army bases in the country. I think the population there is like 15,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was reported that there was a shooter in the 2nd Battalion that started to fire on his fellow servicemen. The shooter was identified as Sergeant Cornelius Radford, 28 years old, from Jacksonville, Florida. This morning, I was watching a press conference on it. The base was immediately locked down. Apparently, he got on base with a personal handgun, which is not authorized on base. So there's definitely going to be an investigation into that. The reports were 6 fellow soldiers were shot. I believe 3 of them were hospitalized. Everyone is expected to survive. And then there was also a 6th soldier who tackled the shooter and he was unarmed and helped take him down. So, I mean, yay for the servicemen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what they need to be doing.
So am I the only one? I feel kind of ridiculous that I didn't know this. But I had multiple people, military families, contact me and say, you know, it's so scary being a military family for a lot of reasons, obviously. But one being that you can't have firearms on the base. One of the people said that. I was like, what? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I knew that because I grew up as a military. I was an Air Force
brat.
But
if you didn't, that's just something that you kind of assume. Of course, they have their firearms with them. And she was like, no. And then also, what I had never really thought of was someone contacted me. She's a veteran. And she said, you know, pray for the families whose husbands or family members are on this base, because it's usually protocol to nobody's allowed to call out, even to their own families. Uh-huh. And she said, sometimes
or give an update.
Yeah, it can take up to like a whole day. And so these family members are sitting in their homes on pins and needles, waiting to find out if one of their family members was impacted by an event like this. And I just, you know, so much.
Well, yeah, they do that too, because they're so strict on information control. Like I specifically remember when I lived in Washington, D.C. for 9/11, mm-hmm. my roommate at the time was Air Force and was on the base when they locked down Bowling Air Force Base, which is right there in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, cell phones were overrun at the time, but she was also, I remember getting a text message from her that everything was, like, she snuck a text message out that everything was on lockdown, but that they couldn't communicate and stuff. So, you know, I wasn't surprised. It is, I think, only the military police can carry, and only if you are doing an exercise can you have a firearm. And those firearms are checked into the armory every time as they use them. So now what was interesting, which was a development that happened, I think, overnight, I saw it this morning, was that the New York Times reported on the story, and they spoke to the father of the shooter. And according to the New York Times, the sergeant had said Radford, which is the shooter, texted his aunt before the attack saying that he was going to a better place. Yeah. So this may have been his intention, may have been suicide also. Mm-hmm. And then his father said that he had been complaining of experiencing racism on the base and that he wanted a transfer. But there is no known, like, he didn't have any combat deployments. There's no known history of mental illness, even though the father did allude that he was suffering from some depression. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they didn't know, like his officers didn't know on the base, was that he had been recently arrested for a DUI and was actually out on bond.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. And I guess they don't. I mean, I know when I was a kid, at least, if my dad did anything off base, like, his officer was immediately notified as soon as they realized that he was Air Force. So not sure why, but they were not aware that he had that DUI and that he was out on bond. So far, the motive for the shooting is not known. It's going to be investigated. And this is going to take a hot minute, because the way the legal system works within the military and their procedures are very different to how it applies to civilians. So I don't know. I don't know if we'll hear any additional details anytime soon on it. But thankfully,
no one was killed.
Correct. Everyone is supposed to do well and survive and come out the other end, which is good news. All right. So, second story. This morning, the president, Trump, woke up, decided to drop a truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. You always know the day is going to start swell.
Yes.
When Trump wakes up first thing in the morning and starts dropping truth.
Especially if the truth ends with, thank you for your attention to this matter, which is now my favorite thing to say to my children. Like, go clean your room. And if you don't clean your room, you will not get dinner. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Yes. He said, I have instructed our Department of Commerce to immediately begin to work on a new and highly accurate census based on modern day facts and figures. Importantly, using the results and information gained from the presidential election of 2024. People who are in the country illegally will not be counted in the census. All caps. Yes. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
This seems very common sense to me. Why would they have been count? Like,
yeah, I don't exactly understand why this is supposed to be. But of course, I mean, I do and I don't.
Yeah.
However, this is all in the context of the current conversation that is happening about the battle of redistricting.
Yes.
In Texas, and now all these Democrat states are saying, well, now we're going to redistrict. However, they have significant more constraints, because most of the Democrat states that are threatening to also do redistricting have either an independent commission, like in the state of California, or their constitution itself does not allow them to do like random redistricting. Yeah.
Yeah. So it has to be methodical and it has to be planned out and specific dates. You can't just go, you know what? It's been a year. Let's try it again. You can't do that.
Now,
I want to talk about this situation, though.
Okay.
This situation of these Texas lawmakers, it irritates me because it's so obviously, it's either, so, okay, let me gather my thought here.
Gather your thoughts, Rachel.
Thank you. It irritates me because it's a production, obviously. They're making a huge scene. But they have to know that their argument is absurd because they themselves do it, right? So then, and they know it's going to have to come to an end. Are they just delaying the inevitable, or are they really think that they're kind of, this is a revolutionary act of resistance? I don't know why they're doing it.
Well, there's those questions, which last time that they did this in 2021, I actually...
Well, it took like, what, 6 weeks?
Last episode, I said I think they lasted a week. It turns out it actually lasted 6 weeks that they were hiding out in D.C.
Okay, time out. Who are the... I want to know the names of all of the lawmakers that are doing this because I have questions.
Dude, there's like 50 of them.
You have children? Do you all just have nannies that are going to take care of your kids for however long you decide to go on this vacation? How is this legal?
There's small dollar donations that are starting to come in because they're going to be incurring fines. And of course, the expense of, I don't know, being in Illinois
on the land,
and not being in their home.
But I really want to understand the kid and husband aspect. Like, are you seriously, this is the hill you want to die on. This is the, I'm steadfast in this. I am going to hide out in another state for as long as it takes so that I can redistrict a map. Like, of all the things that you could grandstand on, this is the thing. And then who's taking care of your family? That's what I want to know. So that's my first question.
Well, my assumption is that their spouses support them to a certain extent. I don't know.
My husband in all kinds of things. He's not going to go hide out in, I don't know, Florida for 6 weeks and sit on a beach while I'm at home, like over a map. Like, come on. No.
Those questions I cannot answer for you. Okay.
Yeah.
But what I can say is that even they've said themselves, Tellerico even mentioned it, because there was rumors going on in the left-wing circles that J.D. Pritzker, because he's a billionaire, was being very magnanimous and that he was paying for their lodging and their food and that possibly he would be paying for their fines and all that sort of stuff. Well, Tellerico, which we've discussed before, said, no, that's not happening. We don't want their money. And he mentioned small dollar donations are helping with what they're doing. However, now also the state of Texas, Paxton.
Ken Patton. Paxton, excuse me.
Yeah. He, like, as far as I know.
Did you read the memo he put out?
Well, yeah, they're investigating to see if this fundraising is tantamount to a type of bribery to see if they can then seek criminal charges on them. So, I mean, this is all developing quite quickly.
I sent it to you. I'm going to pull it up.
Yeah, I was literally, that's exactly what I was about to mention.
So in the New York Times, it was like, I got an alert in my email that the FBI is going to help find Texas lawmakers who fled the state, Cornyn said. The sheer theatrics, the very Hollywood side of this has me entertained. I do want the FBI to go find them and have to like, and they want that too. They want nothing more.
Well, yeah, they want
someone to come.
The drama.
Of course, of course. I just think it is absolutely hilarious. And I also think I'm not surprised. People are ridiculous, but I can't believe people would donate to this. Like if this was the Republicans doing this, I would not be handing over my cash money to support them going to hang out in a different state. Go do your job. Stop it. Like, this is absolutely ridiculous. That's what I think.
Well, and also note that there are other things that they were supposed to be voting on this special session, including the disaster relief that's needed for the flooding that happened a month ago. Yeah. So that's to consider. But I actually I had pulled up an article this morning on Axios because it was Cornyn who said that the FBI Director Kash Patel had granted his request to help locate the lawmakers. Yep. This is a quote. We cannot allow these rogue legislators to avoid their constitutional responsibilities, Cornyn said. It is unclear if the FBI will apprehend the legislators in Illinois and other states. The FBI declined to comment. This is Axios reporting.
Texas issued civil warrants for the Democrat lawmakers, but local law enforcement can't make arrests outside the state. Democrats face a $500 fine for every day that they don't meet quorum. And then J.D. Pritzker walks into the chat, and he was on a podcast, the News Not Noise podcast with Jessica Yellen.
Oh, Jessica Yellen, yeah.
Yes, on Wednesday. And he said they can say that they're sending FBI. FBI agents might show up too. I don't know. Put a show on. But the fact is, our local law enforcement protects everyone in the state of Illinois. And so whether it's federal agents coming to Illinois or state rangers from Texas, if you haven't broken a federal law, you're basically unwelcome. And there's no way that our state legislators here, Texas state legislators, can be arrested. So he's basically saying
there has to be something. Yeah, but there has to be something in the state constitution of Texas about someone being derelict or negligent with their job as a representative. There has to be something. And if there's not, this is a great time for all the states in the union to get your constitution in order, because this is shenanigans. It's a waste of taxpayer money.
Shenanigans.
It is. It's tomfoolery. That's all it is. And I have no time for this. This is as... I don't care what party it is. If my GOP representatives were doing this, bye. You're not getting my vote again. I'm very annoyed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and Pritzker is definitely using this because his intent is to run in 2028. Like, no doubt. So he's using this as, I don't know, like a performance
to show how I'm here to support you. I'm all for the Democrats and we're standing up for democracy. And
you're like, okay. Well, he went on Colbert? I always say his name. Colbert. Okay. I'm so good at this. I'm so glad that I've decided to do this as my job. Anyways, so he went on The Late Show, and to his credit, Colbert actually asked him and pointed out a little bit of hypocrisy that is going on in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Crazy districts in Illinois. Take a look at this. Look at 17 here. It does that. Then it comes up here and it sneaks around there and goes all the way up here and then goes right over there like that. And look at this one kind of goes whoop up there. It's like the stinger on a scorpion down here. Is this common for all states to do?
Well, we handed it over to a kindergarten class and let them decide.
Okay. That's the nonpartisan group that does this.
Absolutely.
For you guys.
That's our independent commission, you know. Mm-hmm. Because
all states to a certain extent do this, why is what Texas doing particularly egregious in this case?
Well, here, question. Every 10 years we do a census in this country, and right after the census we redraw districts in every state. But what the Republicans are trying to do, and the Texas Republicans, frankly, at the behest of Donald Trump, are doing it mid-decade. That is extraordinarily rare.
That's an important point because he literally called them or wrote them and said, hey, I need 5 seats.
Look, he did contact Texas, okay? This is politics, so I'm not going to deny that whether he did or did not do that. However, there is a valid concern when it comes to the census itself that happened in 2020. And the fact that the Census Bureau admitted that they undercounted several states, depriving them of 1 to 2 delegates, states like Texas, Tennessee, and what's the other one? Florida. And I think another one too. So to say that even though like California lost one and I think New York lost one, the point being is like, why is it that the delegates don't work out? Mm-hmm. Just happen to, like, they don't, you know, who gets gypped? It happens to be Republican states.
Yeah.
And so I don't think between the fact that they went ahead and counted illegal migrants and that there was an influx of illegal migrants and the fact that these states were undercounted and didn't get delegates and considering the mass between state migration, you know, from New York to Florida to Texas to California, like all of this, like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's a crazy idea to be like, maybe we should do another either redistricting or even now. I don't know about this census count that the president is proposing. Like, I get the idea, but I'm also a little bit concerned about the process, the time, and the expense that it takes. Yeah. To do another census, unless they come up with some brand new technology to do it quickly and efficiently, which I'm
they're having a hard time with the BLS, as we mentioned on Tuesday. So they're they have some other problems they need to solve.
Because like census, you know? They have to mail stuff out. They have to make phone calls. They have to go to people's houses physically. So I don't know if this is the time. And I don't even know if you'll be able to get a census in time for like the midterms, if this is what his intent is.
I don't think so. Are you kidding?
No.
Those are like right around the corner.
Yeah. I mean, maybe for the next election, for the next presidential election, but I don't think like you're not going to get it for
the census.
I don't know.
Is a huge undertaking. I mean, it's pretty overwhelming. Yeah.
So speaking of the president also, this is just a little tidbit that I saw come across my newsfeed, but there are rumors that he may be potentially seeking to sign an executive order or drafting an executive order that is an anti-debanking executive order.
I shared about that yesterday on Instagram, which is great because conservatives need to know. And it has impacted people, you know, I know. And it would target someone like Trump. It would target people like
us. Well, he shared a story on CNBC about it. We can listen. I have it here. We can hear him share his story.
Well, they did discriminate. I had J.P. Morgan Chase. I had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. I could see if they want to... you know, if they want to do something bad because you don't have any money and you're defaulted and you're this, they took people out. But I'll give you me as an example. I had hundreds of millions. I had many, many accounts loaded up with cash. I was loaded up with cash. And they told me, I'm sorry, sir. We can't have you. You have 20 days to get out.
He had so much cash.
You got to be kidding. I've been with you for 35, 40 years. What happens is, I call up Bank of America routinely because when I was president, this was after I got out, by the way, I call up Bank of America routinely and I speak to him and I speak to a couple of people and they have zero interest. Brian was kissing my ass when I was president. And when I called him after I was president to deposit $1 billion plus and a lot of other things, more importantly, to open accounts, which banks always like. They like accounts. Because they get interest-free, you know, the overnights and things, a lot of reasons for it.
He's doing the weave.
They like accounts. Mm-hmm. I had hundreds of accounts. And he said, we can't do it. No, we can't do it. So I went to...
So he goes on. That's a three-minute-long interview. And he goes on to talk about how he had to, like, split up $1 million in this small bank account and $1 million in this small bank account and how it just, you know, it became a real struggle. There's stories about Melania being debanked. There's stories about Barron being debanked. Of course, there was multiple stories of during the Biden administration, they were really, which I don't know how you can, but they were really anti-AI. And so a lot of AI startups were getting debanked because they didn't want to. So I don't know. The proposal is an executive order that would be anti-debanking. It would order the FDIC, the OCC, the Fed to investigate politically biased account closures. Mm-hmm. It would undo what's called reputable risk or a reputational risk. Mm. And that's about, you know, it's these very, I don't know, like ambiguous and broad definitions of like, if we were to do business with this person, it could negatively affect our reputation.
It almost seems like a social credit score kind of at banks.
Yeah. And it's definitely abused. Like there were even multiple times where I think it was like Phoenix Ammunition or something like that.
Yeah.
Or some kind of business that did it was a firearm dealer, mm-hmm. just like a regular gun dealer. And they were debanked because of concerns of the fact, obviously, that's a political, because, like, you can't, it is ridiculous to get debanked for something that is in the Constitution.
Yes.
Like, what?
Lots of things are in the Constitution that previous administrations didn't really care about.
Like,
so
I don't understand. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And then lastly, for our lightning round, we're going through this fast. I'm actually
that's
very
great.
Proud of us.
We are doing good.
I might have a Chick-fil-A cookie after this.
Oh, nice.
I know. It's like one of my favorite cookies. Like commercials.
Is it really? I have never had one in my life.
You've never had a Chick-fil-A cookie?
I'm not a sweets person, though. You know that.
Oh.
I will say Chick-fil-A, we'll add this into the lightning-esque round. Chick-fil-A broke my heart. Chick-fil-A in Virginia. Because did I mention this on another podcast episode?
I don't know.
I did. But I'm going to mention it again in case anybody at Chick-fil-A is listening. They took away the styrofoam cups. In Virginia.
You've been very excited about this.
My Diet Coke is in a soggy paper cup, and I hate it. I looked forward to that.
It could be worse. You could also have a paper straw.
Gross. I would rather not even have one. But I'm so sad because I keep forgetting. And then I'll drive through. I'll drop like one of the kiddos off a piano and there's a Chick-fil-A right there. I'll drive through to grab one. And every time she hands it to me and I remember. And every time I'm disappointed. I know.
So mad.
I'll never forgive him.
In the state of Tennessee, we still have styrofoam cups at Chick-fil-A. And I personally love their chocolate chip cookie. It has oats in it. They give it to you warm. It's my favorite.
Why would I want oats in my chocolate chip cookie?
For texture. Okay, we're getting off track here. So,
sorry.
What we do need to mention is big news, actually, but it's deep and detailed. And I don't know, we might have to have Amanda on to kind of get into the weeds about this.
Yeah.
But reportedly, this came out from the Kremlin. So yesterday, there was rumors that there was going to be a meeting between Trump and Putin.
Yes.
And also potentially Zelensky would also be there. And that was actually shared by your favorite, Marco Rubio, during I think it was on CNN. Let's see. Where was he? Let's check him out.
Let's begin there. What can you tell us, Mr. Secretary?
Well, Steve went over to Moscow yesterday, Steve Witkoff, Ambassador Witkoff, and had a productive meeting in terms of what was discussed, details that perhaps hadn't been shared before in terms of some ideas about how to bring this war to an end. Let's remind everybody that's the goal here. The president wants to end the war. So it was productive in that sense. We now have to continue to make progress. The president, after getting that update today, convened several leaders from Europe, updated them on what happened in the talks. We're going to be having talks with our European allies and the Ukrainians as well over the next couple of days just to see what progress we can make on that side of it. And then hopefully, you know, if things continue to progress, an opportunity will present itself very soon for the president to meet both with Vladimir Putin and with President Zelensky at some point here, hopefully in the near future. But obviously a lot has to happen before that can occur. But, you know, I've always believed, I've always said this, you know, that I think for the deal, there's going to be a deal to end this war. It'll have to require the president to come in at the end and close on it, as I've seen him do numerous times now on trade deals as an example. So
big news. Well, this morning, the Kremlin said that they were going to have a meeting. Is going to happen. Now, this is being reported by the AP. So Associated Press reported this morning that they got word from the Kremlin and that a meeting has been agreed. Now, the location of the meeting is not exactly known. It could be at the UAE. It could be at Qatar. I mean, I've even heard people speculate that maybe it'll be in a neutral place like Greenland. I don't know. And the optics of where it's going to be, I think, also matters. Like, everybody wants to make sure that, you know, it's not a location that gives anybody an upper hand or anything like that. But
I just want to know if they're going to sit at the really, really, really long table again. Like, if it's the three of them, then is Putin going to be on one side and Zelensky's going to be on the other and Trump is in the middle?
Trump's going to be in the middle?
Like, with a gavel, like, moderating. That's what I want to know.
Well, and all of this matters, too, because so Trump had a deadline for Putin initially that was going to go 30 days. It was like 30 days. You need to come to me. You need to come with a plan on how to end this. I'm tired of your tomfoolery because, you know, in the beginning, he was very patient with him. He's gotten increasingly annoyed with Putin. He was like, well, then he decided I'm moving this deadline up. And I think it was like 10 days. Well, that deadline is tomorrow. In addition to that, I think yesterday or the day before announced that he was going to be imposing tariffs on India, pretty significant tariffs on India.
Yeah, because of their involvement with Russian oil.
Correct, because India is continuing to purchase Russian oil. And so the president's plans here are to, if Putin doesn't, I don't know, get his act together, is to increase sanctions, but not only increase sanctions, but all of these little like strategies that Russia uses to bypass sanctions. Trump also has plans for that, and India being a perfect example. So he's like, I'm going to be imposing 100% tariffs on anyone who's doing business with Russia. And if you're doing, you know, if you're buying their oil, which is, I mean,
he's putting the squeeze on Russia, like a roundabout way. He's making the people who deal with Russia, you know, feel uncomfortable. And that in turn is going to make Russia uncomfortable when these people are putting the pressure on Russia like, hey, we want to buy your oil, but we can't afford it anymore. Stop this war. And there's enough of them putting the squeeze on Putin. So we'll see.
Yeah. And for all reports that I hear, Russia economically is just not doing good. So any kind of squeeze should help.
Excuse me.
And according to a Gallup poll, 70% of Ukrainians are supporting Trump's peace talks
Yeah.
Which is a significant shift from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, and people are tired. I mean, this has been going on what? It's over 3 years now. They're tired. They're done.
And there is no question that we would not be here if Trump hadn't won.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine?
Like, without Kamala a doubt.
Trying to, please. I try and forget that even happened. Don't remind me. It's fine.
Well, you're going to have to remember her probably here in a little bit.
Well, we're going to get her book, but then, I mean, people are saying 2028 might be happening. I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? Okay.
Yes.
So another story, because there was a lot of, I found this story particularly. So this story is literally not a story anymore. But I think it's
media
interesting.
Wanted it to be a story. Very,
correct. That's exactly why I want to talk about it, because it is clear that the media wanted it to be a story. And it all started with an exclusive breaking news report from CNN. And I'm going to have Caitlin Collins give you the breakdown of what they alleged was their scoop.
We have some breaking news this hour, as sources are telling CNN that top Trump administration officials are going to meet tomorrow night at the vice president's residence, where we are told that the main focus is going to be the administration's handling of the Jeffrey Epstein case, as well as the need to present a unified front. That meeting is going to include White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles, the vice president, of course, J.D. Vance, Attorney General Pam Bondi, FBI Director Kash Patel, and the Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, who recently sat down with Ghislaine Maxwell. CNN reported earlier that the administration is weighing whether or not to release an audio recording or a transcript of that interview that he did with Maxwell last month. And tonight, sources say that there have also been internal discussions about what exactly Blanche's next step could be, including holding a press conference or doing a high-profile interview, possibly with someone like Joe Rogan. Though I should note, those conversations are still preliminary based on our understanding.
Did you see that report when it first broke? So today is Thursday. So it was Tuesday night. That happened Tuesday night.
Yeah. I caught
it. What was your first thought?
Like, I was like, no, that doesn't sound right. So that, and I have to be honest, like, Caitlin Collins is difficult for me to watch just because she seems so sad. You know how, to me, like, optics matter? She is totally different now than she was
when she was with the Daily Caller.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you do a side-by-side picture, and you know me, I'm never here to talk about people's looks and like degrade them at all. I think that that's a waste of time and it's lazy. But it is interesting to me how she looks like markedly different after the last like 6 to 8 years in the media. She looks angry and sad all the time. And even when she smiles, it feels sad. And then I realized someone said, you know, she used to work for the Daily Caller. I'm like, no, she didn't. And I saw pictures and she just looked so happy. And I want to ask her, like, Caitlin, what happened? Like, why so sad? So then when she hops on, even when she's in the White House press briefings, she's so caustic that it makes it hard for me to digest, like, her. I don't watch her show, but when I see her on and reporting, it just makes it difficult for me to watch her. You know what I mean?
Never really thought too much about it. My assumption is just, you know, she's a journalist at CNN and she doesn't like the president and it's all over her face.
Yeah.
Like, she tries to make it seem like she, you know, I'm unbiased and I'm a hard, you know, hitting reporter. She even was on, what show was it? Remember, she did a late night show?
Yeah, but I don't remember.
She made a comment,
I
think it was with Fallon. And she made this comment of like, you know, CNN reports unbiased journalism.
And everybody laughed.
And everybody laughed.
Thought it was a joke. Yes, because it is the joke. That is a hilarious.
And she was like, is that supposed to be funny? And I'm like,
well, sweetie, well, I know you didn't mean it to be, but.
But it's pretty obvious that everybody else thinks it's a joke, which means they think CNN is a joke.
And honestly, a lot of those people I would assume that are in Fallon's audience are not necessarily like MAGA right wingers. They're on her side of the aisle and they still are like, okay, Caitlin.
Okay, sure.
You do you.
Well, you saw like she made that report very confident.
Like it was very serious.
Yeah. And I remember I saw it and I was like, that sounds weird to me.
Yes.
First of all, it sounds weird
specifically because the first place I'm hearing it from is CNN.
Yeah.
So this is clearly a leak. And it's not a leak because we've talked about this. There's different types of leaks. There's leaks that are not meant to go out. And then there's leaks that are meant to go out and meant to test the waters.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you can tell the purpose of the leak depending on the outlet that's reporting on it. Mm-hmm. If CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post or something like that, if they have a source or a leak, nobody's like, it's not meant to be good news or it's not meant to be positive, and it's not the administration feeling out the public.
Right. Yeah.
If it's someone like Axios or Fox News or something like that, then, you know, more, it's a little bit more likely. And maybe like one or two reporters at ABC, it's a little bit more likely that
it's an actual story.
It's an actual like testing the waters type of leak. So for me, it was pretty obvious that this wasn't, the administration didn't do this.
No.
This is someone that got word of some kind of rumor. And I think in the process of telephone, Epstein came up because that's clearly what they want everybody to be talking about. And so they framed it as they're having this meeting about Epstein.
Yeah.
Well, the following morning, the vice president's office responded and said, I have it here. It says, this is Mary Margaret Olihan that was reporting on it. And the quote from the comms director at the VP says, the CNN story is pure fiction. There was never a supposed meeting scheduled at the vice president's residence to discuss Epstein's strategy. So I'm like, okay. Yeah. Now, but, you know, is that there was never a supposed one?
Or could have just been, yeah, he was having a strategy meeting there and Epstein was one of like 25 things that they were going to strategize about, and some staffer or whoever, you know, maybe the gardener out front heard a rumor and ran over to the press pool. Who knows? But they, it could have been one of many things they were going to talk about. And then someone was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to tell someone. And then it just blows up from there. It's silly.
Well, J.D. Vance talked about it himself during the press. By the way, so there was a press conference yesterday with the president and Apple, the head of Apple, Tim Cook.
Mm-hmm.
About another $100 billion investment that Apple was going to make in the United States.
And I want to talk about the body language of that after you're done.
Okay. Well, I just thought it was funny. I was going to mention that, and also that Tim Cook gave him a plaque that was gold plated, which I thought was very like, he knows what he's doing, trying to butter up the president with a gold-plated plaque.
Oh, yeah.
But they were asked specifically about this alleged meeting, and Vance shared, you know, his thoughts on it.
Yep. Is Vice President Vance hosting a gathering this evening to talk about how to respond to the Epstein situation?
Is he working on what?
Is he hosting some kind of gathering of top advisors this evening to talk about how to respond to the Epstein situation?
I don't know. I could ask you that question. I don't know of it, but I think here's the man right here.
I saw a report today, and it's completely fake news. We're not meeting to talk about the Epstein situation, and I think the reporter who reported it needs to get better sources.
On that point,
look, the whole thing is a hoax. It's put out by the Democrats because we've had the most successful 6 months in the history of our country.
So, and notice that J.D. Vance, if you listen to what he's saying, he says, there's no, we're not having a meeting about Epstein. He didn't say, though, that they're not having a dinner. Now,
yeah, that's fine.
To summarize it, it appears that the dinner didn't happen. Now, okay. I did hear an interesting theory from Mark Halperin on last night on Two Way. I think he had on Mark Caputo from Axios. And so they were talking about this, you know, and they were, you know, taking it apart and bringing up the fact that it's kind of like a non-denial denial, and there's, you know, some clear parsing of words. But if you look at who was going to attend, which was Vice President Vance, the Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, AG Bondi, Director, FBI Director Patel, and then also Deputy AG Tom Blanchett, which represented Trump while he was going through all of the cases over the 4 years that he was being sued. They suspect that it was meant to be like a team building dinner, specifically because Vance and Wiles is there, and Wiles' chief of staff is trying to like make sure everybody gets along and works well together. Mm-hmm. And there has been a little bit of a reported rift between the FBI and the DOJ, especially on Epstein, because of the way
Bondi kind of marketed it, like FBI's withholding things from me.
Yeah. And then the FBI's like, Patel and Bongino went out and did an interview early on and were just kind of like, look, you know, we got access to stuff. There was nothing there. And then at the same time, Bondi's like saying, I got 10,000 documents, you know, sitting on my desk. Mm-hmm. So reportedly, it created a little bit of a riff to the point where even we speculated that Bondi might be out soon. And it looks like to me, or at least they were speculating, that they just kind of wanted to get everybody to be copacetic.
Yeah.
And, you know, not try and create friction between the departments. And I think that's a pretty plausible explanation
Kinds of situations, I don't understand why they can't just be like, yeah, we were going to have a dinner. We're in administration. We work together. We're having dinner. Like, the thing that makes everybody speculative and put on their tinfoil hats is when you like give little bits, like the little crumbs of information, instead of just saying the thing. If they just said we were going to have dinner to talk about stuff.
They should have just had the dinner.
They should have just said that and then been like, and they would say, well, what are you going to talk about? I don't know. A couple things. I mean, and then just be done. Like, you don't
have to talk about at dinner,
but just like be upfront. It just makes no sense to me when they hide things that don't need to be hidden. Like, you work in the executive branch. You can have dinner whenever you want. Because you have important things.
Obviously, it makes sense to have dinner at the vice president's office or residence. Because if you don't want it to be political, you know, or I'm sorry, if you don't want it to be administrative, you know, you can't. And it's even if it's like, you don't do it during work hours if you're trying to make it, especially if it's like a team, if it was like a team building dinner. And it's not like these are people that can just like, I don't know, run down to Capitol Grill and have dinner together.
Right. That sounds good. I could really go for some old Ebbett right now. Can we go back to the video real quick and pause? Yes.
Which one? You want me to go back to the video and pause?
Where JD's talking.
Let's go back. All right.
Posting a
here we go.
I don't know of it, but I think here's the man, right? Yeah.
Okay. Is he just like severely in the foreground, or is he that much taller than Tim Cook? I mean, he looks... J.D. Vance looks really tall there.
J.D. Vance is over 6 feet tall.
Okay, so he's just a big boy. Okay.
Yeah, he is. Like, he and... I don't know if he's taller, but him and Trump are... They're both tall dudes.
Okay, well, I have no idea. I stood literally within 6 feet of the president, and he is not as big as everybody thinks he is. He's not... Like, you know how they always tease him? They're like, he's overweight. He's, you know, tall but fat. So I was right next to him, and he really isn't that big. And he doesn't appear, he didn't feel super tall to me. I mean, definitely like 6 foot, yeah, for sure. But he wasn't heavy in the way that they make him look
out,
you know,
to be.
In photographs. Yeah. So, okay, I wanted to know that. And then also, when I was watching the video of Tim Cook and him exchanging, you know, statements, and Tim Cook was giving him the gold, what was it? Was it a...
It was a plaque with a 24-karat gold-plated
made in
base.
Kentucky, right? They said that everything...
The glass, I think, is made in Kentucky because they're opening up a facility in Kentucky to produce the glass for the iPhones.
Did you see his hand shaking the whole time he was holding it? Which I just think is so interesting. Tim Cook, go back and watch the video. His hands were shaking the whole time. He was, like, trying to get it out and handing it to him. And I'm watching it. You know me. I'm all about, like, the body language and the little details.
Clearly, because I did not catch this.
But I just – to me, it's so interesting because this is a very, very, very powerful man. A billionaire. I mean, just, like, an extremely popular, well-known, affluent man who is that nervous, like, just being – And maybe it's the cameras, but he's in front of cameras like all the time. He gives,
I don't know.
Like, no, but he's
but it's different.
In front of, like, totally, it is different. But I just thought it was so interesting how Trump has this effect on people. And maybe it was the press being there and the meeting in the White House. But I was like, no, I mean, it's the Trump effect. This guy owns arguably like one of the biggest businesses in the world. And he's standing there like kind of shaking when he's handing the president this whatever.
I didn't notice that.
I wish that was
fascinating. I mean, also, I know he's a public figure and he speaks on stage and stuff like that, but it's very different when you're doing public speaking to a friendly audience versus a small intimate room there that you are also not the boss
of. Well, that's the
circus, you know?
Is it me or is the Oval Office getting more garish as we move on? Like, I feel like those gold decals are like growing. I think I've mentioned this before. It's kind of like in one of those Monty Python movies where the wart or the mole on the guy's face keeps moving.
I thought of it like gremlins, like every time a gremlin gets wet, like they multiply. Yeah.
That's it. I just feel like, like in Nanny McPhee, her nose is humongous and it keeps getting small. So anyways, when I'm looking at that, I'm going, the last time I saw the Oval Office, there was not that gold paneling on that side. It's just
fill in the blank. Yeah.
Like,
well, I just saw a photo because apparently there was like a medallion on the ceiling and the medallion's always been like the same color as the ceiling. Well, not it's anymore. Gilded now.
Okay.
It is painted and gilded.
There is such thing as too much gold, in my opinion.
Well, okay. Since we're on this topic, even though this wasn't on the outline, I want to ask you. It's on the outline now. It is on the outline now. The ballroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we had this discussion
on
the back channels. And so there's a lot about the ballroom. In fact, I think Trump was, he was on the roof of the White House the other day.
So hilarious.
Walking it, yelling. It's created the best meme.
It did. Yelling. That was great.
With him yelling and his covering his mouth.
Yeah.
But the reports are that the East Wing of the White House. So there's the White House itself. And a lot of times people think about East and West Wing and they're just thinking about the center of the White House and then the two arms that come off of it. But actually, off of the White House, the entire structure itself, there's two walkways that come off each side, covered walkways or whatever. I don't know how to describe it, like hallways.
Yeah.
That then lead to the West and also the East Wing, which are separate buildings.
Yeah.
And it is my understanding that the East Wing has held like press offices, the office of
Melania's office, and then I think like the naval or something military. There's a couple offices over there.
Yeah. So initially, when I heard about what was going on with this ballroom, I thought it was just like a whole other building that was being added on. Mm-mm. And apparently, it's the West Wing. Mm-hmm. Am I saying it is the West Wing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. East Wing, whatever. That side.
The one side.
That one side. I can't remember. I'm trying to picture it, but is being remodeled and then added on to that is going to be the ballroom.
Yeah.
Because apparently when they do state dinners and stuff like that, they have to erect a tent. And so
they do every single time.
Yeah. And I didn't know that. I had no idea that they had to erect a tent every time they did a state dinner.
They can only fit, I think it's about 200 or so guests or 250, but that's even with the tents. Like, it's kind of insane. And they have to do those. They're really nice tents and they have to bring in lighting and heating and all of that every single time. And so in order to have like a proper state dinner, this ballroom is going to be able to hold up over 600 people, which is crazy. I'm all for it. I think it's excellent.
I'm still like, I see the reasoning behind it. And also now that I understand that it's actually an extension of an existing structure, it makes a little bit more sense to me. My only concern is I think this thing is supposed to be like 90,000 square feet or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be really big.
It's going to be ginormous.
Massive, yeah.
Huge. It's going to be huge, okay?
Yeah. Huge. Yes.
Huge. And my concern is because I have some particular tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm just a little concerned about the balance that the effect it is going to have on the balance of the White House. Like, I'm a little concerned that there's going to be like the White House and then this giant thing off to the side.
Yeah. I get
and
that.
I don't like that idea.
I think though, I mean, I can't see it being so off kilter that someone wouldn't kind of,
I mean, I would hope the architect would take that into consideration.
No, we're not going to do that. Yeah. And the architect that's doing it, oh gosh, what's the name? Is it Clark? I forget. They're based in DC.
Focus on Catholic churches, apparently.
Yeah. They work in DC. And from what I've seen, they do some really beautiful work. I would not imagine that they go to all the great lengths to put together these beautiful renderings and what it's going to look like. And it's so precise. And they're just going to like drop a big building on the side of the, I think
it's actually funny that you mentioned that.
The integrity of the the building.
Yeah, it's actually funny that you mentioned that, because I was on, you know, Substack, and they have like their version of X or Twitter or whatever.
Yeah.
And what is his name? Last name Sullivan. Anyways, he posted,
Andrew Sullivan?
Andrew Sullivan, yeah. He posted this. Was it Andrew Sullivan? May not. It doesn't matter. He posted this image, and it was like this fake AI rendered image that literally just like glued a box next to the White House. And I chimed in with like, this is an inaccurate image, because somebody asked, is this real? I said, no, I provided the correct image. And I was like, and just in case anybody asks, it's going to be funded through private donations. So the president's going to pay for it and through private donations.
Nope. People don't like that.
Apparently, just giving you some facts, like, made some people really upset.
It hurts people's tummies.
I heard the wildest responses.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter. It's, to them, it's just, like, ugly. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I just thought, I thought it would be interesting, because he is definitely intending to leave his mark on the White House. Yeah. We have two brand new flagpoles. Mm-hmm. The office is gilded. So gilded.
I mean, that's coming down like the day that the next president so moves gilded. In, obviously. So, but yeah, he's leaving a mark. And I think it's great, because, you know, I don't know why you would be opposed to it if he's not. I mean, he's funding it along with private donors. It's beautiful. It'll allow.
Of course, the left is suggesting that it's just going to be a money laundering kind of scheme in order to buy
favors.
They're
going to say that no matter what. I posted something yesterday about how Trump put out on Truth Social yesterday that he's giving his first paycheck to the White House National Association or Historical Association, excuse me. He's not taking that paycheck. He's going to give it to them. And I was like, that's good. I like that. And people get mad at that. I'm like, you guys, are you kidding me? It's a refusal.
By the way, the Historical Association partakes in things like this, like the ballroom and these renovations.
Yes. And they will. And with that available, there will be so many more events. And I think it's, I want to make entertaining great again. I want to make hospitality great again. And I want there to be parties now.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to the idea. I think it's actually a really good idea. I think it's an efficient idea. I'm really hoping, you know, because
you're just nervous it's going to be ugly. That's what you're nervous
about.
That's
my only concern. Especially because, you know, we're talking about Trump, who gilds
everything.
He gilds a lot.
He gilds a lot. Yes. So that is like my only concern. Yeah. And I don't know if you guys have heard, but moving on to another story that was in the outline, Kamala Harris is publishing a book about her 107-day campaign. Here, let's watch her promo real quick. Actually, it's a short version of her promo because I was like, it's too long.
No, you can't watch the whole
thing. I can't listen to this entire thing, and I'm not going to subject you to that, but let's listen.
Just over a year ago, I launched my campaign for President of the United States. 107 days traveling the country, fighting for our future. The shortest presidential campaign in modern history. It was intense, high stakes, and deeply personal for me and for so many of you. Since leaving office, I've spent a lot of time reflecting on those days, talking with my team, my family, my friends, and pulling my thoughts together. In essence, writing a journal. That is this book, 107 Days. With candor and reflection, I've written a behind-the-scenes account of that journey. I believe there's value in sharing what I saw, what I learned, and what I know it will take to move forward. In writing this book, one truth kept coming back to me. Sometimes the fight takes a while.
All right, two things. If you knew what it was going to take to move forward, you would have won the election, but you don't know what it takes to move forward. Second of all, I will be buying that book and I will be reading And unlike Original Sin, which I thought was actually kind of boring, and it just basically told us everything we already knew. I didn't even
with a few extras
finish it. I was like, I can't do this. In fact, I was like, I'm going to start a book club with my Substack community. And halfway, not even halfway through, a couple chapters in, they're like, so what'd you think of the last chapter? I'm like, I didn't read it because it's stupid. But this book, this one I will be reading because, I just can't wait.
Interested.
Oh, yeah.
I am interested.
Oh, yeah.
I'm interested because
I'm interested because I want to know what's in her mind.
Yes.
I want to know what you're thinking, Kamala.
Like, what excuses is she going to make? Who is she going to throw anybody under the bus? I'm very curious if she's going to do any direct or indirect throwing of Biden under the bus.
I think if she had, we would have heard about it by now. Well, people have read this book. I feel like we would have known.
Yeah. Well, it's actually funny. You shared this with me yesterday.
Oh, yes. It was.
But Mark Halperin, I know we've mentioned him a few times on today's episode, but he's been doing, I think he's done two so far of like a parody version of chapter one and chapter two of the book.
Well, when I first read it, I thought it was real. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. Honestly, it took me a minute to get it. That says a lot, quite honestly.
That's hilarious. Actually sent it to me. I'm like, oh, wow, he got the first chapter and I haven't heard anybody else talk about it. That's really odd. Mm-hmm. And I was busy writing an article that I was working on Spencer Pratt, which is it was a good one. Go read it. Anyway, and then I read it and I was like, wait,
what
is not real?
Yeah, it took me a minute.
He is writing that because he's got some inside rumors about the Biden camp gearing up and preparing themselves to, I guess, basically undermine or trash Kamala if she does anything against any kind of bad press or anything against Biden. So I actually have the clip where he talks about that.
I'm going to break a little news here. Okay. We talk all the time about, you know, what did Kamala Harris know and when did she know it about his cognitive decline? I will tell you, and this has never been reported barely at all. If the Biden people decide that Kamala Harris is coming after Joe Biden, wait till you hear the Palin-esque stories about how much they tried to help her be prepared to be vice president and be in a position to run, and how much they decided not happening. She's not up to this. And if the Biden people feel threatened, you will hear stories about Kamala Harris as vice president that will not make her look good. Okay.
I mean, that's so not hard.
There's a closeness to the couples. It's not like they're at war currently, but I'm telling you, if Joe Biden feels threatened, if his people feel threatened by her, this is going to escalate in a big
way.
Look
at Sean Spencer rubbing his hands
together. She will have a hard time defending against the stories that damn bursts. They were extraordinary in trying to help her do the job of vice president. They gave her every opportunity. And they found in some instances that she had some issues. Okay. Moving forward.
And that is
so, two things.
Yes.
On that. I just lost my thought. Oh, that's so sad. Who are the Biden people? When he keeps saying Biden people, I'm like, does he have anyone around him anymore that are his people?
I mean, I'm not sure who is still with, like, for example, Anthony Bernal, who was Jill's chief of staff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if she's still with or if he's still with them. Obviously, Jill, Hunter, Biden, when he knows what day it is.
We've seen what Hunter does when he gets mad. I mean, he goes full tilt. So
he was just doing that ridiculous podcast. What was it? Channel 5 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I shared a clip of it in my stories where he's painting and he's bringing up Epstein again. I mean, it's just I'm sure the Democrats are like, please go away, dude.
Yeah, he's a train wreck.
Please stop and go away.
But like, honestly, I don't feel like they can say anything outside of like a scandal to make her look kind of, or to surprise anybody about her. I don't.
It's who they can surprise. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, for example, in commentary, general political circles, especially within the Democrat Party itself, like they know she's not great. Yeah. It is known she couldn't even get through her first primary 19. And, you know, there's often discussions about how, like, yeah, she's smart, but she's completely inept in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. So this would be additional context because it's like not you can't even say that she's smart anymore and just, you know, crashes and burns in front of the camera. This would be additional stories of like she's not. She crashes and burns in front of the camera, but she's also like is inept to being the president or leader of the free world. We tried to do all of these things to help her.
Substance situations too, which is what I think a lot of people.
And I think too, like you have to admit that there is an element within the left that it doesn't matter. I mean, they were swooning all over Kamala Harris just because she was a woman. She was a person of color, you know, and pro-abortion and pro-women's rights, however you want to, you know, frame it. And so she could do no wrong. And even her, I mean, it's a common talking point within Democrat commentators and her supporters that they just didn't have enough time. Just 107 days just wasn't enough time. Mind you, she hid for half of those 107 days.
Well, and mind you, she ran before for president. And mind you, too, she was the vice president. It's not like she's unfamiliar with all of these different situations she's going to be thrown in. Like, you should be used to it by now. I'm sorry.
For sure. Like, I don't really think there is an excuse. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, Mark is like the Palin-esque stories that they have. In case you guys don't know what that reference to, it's to Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin.
Yeah. Who ran as VP to John McCain, I think it was in 2012. Yeah, because it was Biden term. And so that's where that's coming up is Palin-esque, where the conversation in political circles was that Palin really wasn't that great or that capable of being in a position of leadership like a president. And so honestly, I think to me is a much more appropriate comparison would be to Serena from Veep, which if you have never watched that. Oh my God. You have never watched Veep?
No.
It is so good.
Okay. I need to watch it.
It is one of my favorite, especially like political comedies.
Everybody always assumes I'm going to love political shows. And so they're like, you have to watch it. You of all people, you're going to be in love. So people tried to convince me to watch The West Wing and I was going to be upset.
No, not The West Wing.
Then they said House of Cards. I watched one episode. I'm like, I'm out. Veep, people said you have to watch it. And I just can't get into
the but only Veep is different because it's a comedy. And if you have, did you ever like Seinfeld?
No.
Or The Office or anything like that?
I like The Office, yeah.
So I would say it has like an Office type quality where Serena is Michael Scott. with like, see, that's what I'm saying. With all these like little minions around her that are just,
and especially the vice president.
She starts off as a vice president, correct?
Okay, I'll watch that. And I actually I have a show that you might like. You've probably already seen it.
I watched so much content. It's ridiculous.
I watched it a couple years ago and they went on and made like a second and a third season and we did not like those as much. But the first season of Designated Survivor, did you ever see that?
I think I watched some of the first season. I tend not to like network television.
It was actually good because it was about the actual, it's Kiefer Sutherland, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's about how like,
he's the designated survivor and they're giving a speech and he's like the deputy director of like urban development. Okay, he's like 40th in line to become the president if something happens to everybody else. Well, something happens to everybody else. And it's, I thought it was really, really well done. I actually really enjoyed it. That was the one political show that I thought, okay. But see, again, the algorithm got me because it was all about like destruction, grid going down, emergency, like survival. And that's very much my vibe. Like, I don't need happy, clappy government.
I think I watched maybe like the first few episodes and I didn't finish it. I'll give it another consideration.
I really liked it. I did. I thought it was good.
But I think that is all that we have so far that I have in the outline.
Yeah,
any
we did
stories
good.
That I missed that you have concerns about that you want to share? Did you see that Bill Hemmer has been in Gaza? Like reporting on the food supply issue.
I like him. I've always liked him. I think he's a good guy. I feel like I can tell that he's a good guy. You know what I mean? Watch, he's a total skeevy, like.
No, I agree with you. I like him. I think he's a good guy. Yeah.
No, I don't think that there's much. I think. What has been on my mind this week talking about? I will say I'm still watching this Mamdani situation. I think I've decided this week, and I told you, I think whatever Democrat for the 2028 election really majors on affordable housing, I think that they're going to be the ones to take it.
We were talking about this on the text thread yesterday.
Yeah, I was thinking about it only because I'll make it short. I remember my grandparents telling us they bought their first house in like 1950, I don't know, two or three, and they bought it for $10,000. And this is in Long Beach, California, where we grew up. And I just so happened to look it up on like Zillow, and it's currently for sale they've done no major upgrades. It's still like they haven't added on. The backyard looks exactly the same as when I was playing back there. Minimal upgrades to like the bathrooms. The kitchen looks the same. And it's for sale right now. And mind you, 1,200 square feet. So it's a itty bitty. And it's for sale for $1.1 million. And this isn't even in the nicest areas in Southern California. It's a nice area, but it's $1.1 million. And I just thought, oh boy, like affordability on housing is such an issue. And I think that we've talked about how Mondami is tapping into something. And I'm just saying, I think that, I don't know. I think that.
I don't know. I get what you're saying. I just think Republicans themselves, like, kind of at a weird disadvantage in that, only in that, you know, the housing market and the cost of housing is so region dependent. It's so market dependent. You know, there's so many elements that come into what makes a house cost what it costs. Yeah. And that is also one of the reasons that the president right now is pushing so hard on the Fed to reduce interest rates. One of the things that he cites most is the fact that he wants people to be able to buy homes, but that the interest rates are just too high for home purchasing. And so, I mean, I feel like the Republicans really need to get creative in talking about the issue and creating incentives to make it more accessible, but they can't do, like, the Democrats have it easy, quote unquote.
I'm not saying that.
Because they could just be like, you can't raise the rent, or I'm going to give you this amount of money, or you're no longer allowed to do this. And it's just like, well, when you're free market.
I'm not saying that the Democrats talk about it, that they'll totally wipe out the Republicans in a runoff. I'm saying whatever Democrat candidate makes that like one of their top talking points, I think that candidate will be the Democrat candidate. I think that.
Gotcha.
I mean, Mondami, I've seen multiple interviews of people in New York and they're like, well, what do you like about what he's saying? What does he stand for that you like? And almost every time they're like, well, I don't really like everything. I know he's a socialist, but he's going to bring down costs of living and he's going to bring down rent. And I know. Whatever, but it's Bernie runs on that and the kids love it. And it doesn't matter where you live in America, housing is expensive. And Democrats, and especially this younger generation, they want more affordable housing.
And it's fair. I don't fault them.
Right. Yeah. So I just kind of feel like I'm paying attention to that. And I just couldn't believe that my grandparents' house that's that small, $1.1 million. And
I mean, here in Tennessee, things blew up over COVID. Like, thankfully, we got here right before COVID and like prices were normal. Yeah. The value on our house has doubled easily, if not more.
Same here. Yep.
In just a short amount of time because of, you know, all of the people, especially all the coasters that decided to come into into, you know, the Tennessee area.
See, I just moved from coast to coast, so no one could be mad at me. But I have friends who did like California to Texas or California to Idaho. And those people are big mad at the Californians. Like, stay in your state and fix it.
I remember we had some friends. I remember we had some friends that relocated from California to here. And immediately they were like changing out their license plates, buying volunteer college, like Tennessee College merch.
So they can blend. So they can blend in. Yeah. Because. There's no love lost.
And then he would wear this like Vols neon orange sweatshirt, but then his jeans were clearly West Coast jeans.
Yeah.
Like they were some kind of weird wash and cut. They weren't Wranglers, you know, or Levi's.
They were like seven jeans from Nordstrom and they were like hipster.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, bro, you got to get rid of the jeans.
I know.
Too.
I know. It's like bringing Spencer Pratt to Tennessee and being like,
who is my current obsession right now?
I know.
Spencer
He's
Pratt.
Great. He's great, but I mean, that's California right there. And those people were moving to like Idaho and Idaho was like, stop it. No more. Just stay down there.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. I hope you had a fabulous time. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button. We are here every Tuesday and Thursday. And if you are a paying supporter, you'll get a bonus episode, you get ad-free episodes, and you'll also get to watch this episode on video while we work out the kinks. Honestly, it's a scheduling situation and an infrastructure situation. And also, I had to learn the software. So, baby steps.
But I mean, I got a new camera. Look it.
Yes. Look at you. Like,
my face doesn't look like it's in a snow globe. We're moving on up. We are moving on up.
We're almost there, right? But in the meantime, if you want to watch us right now exclusively on Substack, please consider becoming a paying supporter. There is a discount link in the show notes along with a link to our merch. Fun times. Go check that out. That's it. Today's Thursday, so we'll see you again on Tuesday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. All right. Bye. Bye.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.